Gandhi said the roots of your destiny are in your beliefs.
Join Prison Pipeline on May 12th for a one-hour special called This I Believe.
We are women sharing deeply held beliefs that guide our lives. We are women incarcerated at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility.
Tune in to Prison Pipeline, May 12th, 6 to 7 p.m.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland. The time is 9:01, and up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting an evening with Carla Bonoff and Jim Webb tomorrow night, tonight at 8 p.m. Tickets and information for Carla Bonoff and Jim Webb tomorrow night, tonight at Aladdin-Theater.com.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Hi, folks. Guess what? We are moles in the ground, rooting those mountains down on this mole radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. As for me, I'm proud to be a mole, because us moles, we've always made history. The absolute monarchs, they're all gone. Buckingham Palace, it's now a tourist trap. The thousand-year Reich? Oh, it lasted 12 years. Stalinist Russia and its commissars? Longer, 60 years. As to the lords of commerce, today's ruling elites, they too will get their just desserts to entertain and educate in dusty museums. And the exhibits devoted to the lords of commerce, those exhibits will show how their system of exponential growth came close to destroying the ecosystems that maintain life itself. What will replace that system of exponential growth? It's called capitalism. Its replacement, that's now a work in progress. It will be decided in struggle and by us moles in making our daily lives and in building political movements. One thing I'm sure of, this radio station, KBOO, in its 45 years, has contributed to that struggle in all its programming and its music and its news and public affairs. For KBOO critiques are increasingly top-down and polluting society. For KBOO honors the work of ordinary folks. For KBOO promotes authentically democratic and sustainable lifeways and demonstrates that this emerging democratic sustainable world is necessary and possible. This is day 12 of KBOO's spring membership drive. If you listen to KBOO, if you want to keep us on the air, please call, become a member, renew, or donate. Show your appreciation and support for the programs, though it so enrich your life, that bring you the most interesting and thoughtful people on this planet, that remind you that you are not alone, that there are so many who love and support the values that you want to live by. We want you to call and become a member. This show, the Old Mole Variety Hour, tries to contribute to do its bit. On today's Old Mole, we examine the repeated massive revolts by working people in this country, starting before the American Revolution and continuing in this day, which mainstream media, of course, do their best to ignore or corrupt or misinterpret. I'm Bill Resnick, your host today. I talked to Jeremy Brecker, who just published a revised, updated edition of his classic book. It's called Strike. It's available today as a gift for those who become members or renew or donate. Today, Moel Fran Michelle comments on ballot measure 26156. It proposes a separate board for water, sewer, and environmental bureaus. Would that advance city democracy? We think not. And last today, Norm Diamond and I'm Bill Resnick, your host today, will discuss the stage play at the Portland Playhouse. It's there till June 1st. It's titled After the Revolution. It's about a left family coming to grief about politics, though finally coming together. It's in some ways a feel-good play, but a really good one. First on today's Mole, I talked to Jeremy Brecker. Jeremy Brecker, welcome to KBOO.
Hi, good to be on.
Jeremy Brecker is a historian and activist. He co-founded the Labor Network for Sustainability. His book, Strike, is seen as one of the most important, inspiring, a must-read. It's a classic of U.S. working-class history. Indeed, it offers a very different and compelling understanding of this country's history and its economic development. The first edition came out in 1972. This re-edition was released this year on May Day. The first sentence reads, "This book is the story of repeated, massive, and sometimes violent revolts by ordinary working people in this country." Jeremy Brecker, first tell us how you came to write the book, and then compare one of the early great revolts in the 19th and 20th, early 20th centuries to our 21st century uprisings.
Well, provocative questions. The way I started writing Strike came from family that were strong union supporters, and I was active in various social movements of the 1960s. And I was a student at Reed College right there in Portland, Oregon in 1963 and 64. And I started looking at the shelf in the library that had books on labor history. And at that time, it was a very short shelf. It had maybe a dozen books on it or so, and all of them quite old. And I started looking through. And it was an amazing story that I had never learned. It was a complete revelation to me. And I especially found a book with a lurid yellow and red cover called 1877 Year of Violence, which told the story of the great upheaval of 1877, which was viewed at the time as an almost revolutionary struggle. And so I thought, gee, this ought to be part of what working people know today, and it ought to be part of what radicals who are out to change the system know today. It ought to be part of what we share with each other and part of what we recognize as a background for the things we're doing now to try to make a better world and a better life.
And you began reading much more widely, and you found so many other of these uprisings or eruptions, great general strikes throughout the 19th and early 20th century. Tell us about maybe the great upheaval of 1877, the railroad strike. Compare it to, let's say, Occupy, or one of our right. current movements.
Right. Well, let me actually take another one just after that, which was the upheaval of 1886, which is known to us because it was climaxed with the so-called Haymarket Riot, the demonstration and police intervention that led to the, they say, judicial assassination of a group of labor anarchists who are known historically as the Haymarket Martyrs and are the people for whom May Day was originally celebrated as a labor holiday. The thing that was different, and you talked about the thesis of strike, most labor history was written at that time in terms of the institutional story of trade unions, the cord winders or the bartenders or one or another union with a long list of officials and contract developments over the course of the decade. And the ordinary working people and what they experienced and why they wanted to organize and to act was quite marginal to the story. And once you started looking at what was happening with the people, you discovered these periods of mass upheaval, of what I came to refer to as periods of mass strike, a term that I learned from Rosa Luxemburg. And taking the 1886 as an example, basically unions had been broken after the great upheaval of 1877. But there were a series of strikes, some of them actually what we today would call wildcat strikes, not organized by unions, others organized by new emerging unions on the railroads and factories and in wide range of industries. And somewhere along the line, the idea of, well, why don't we all demand 8-hour day and let's have some kind of direct action to make that happen. And this idea caught on like wildfire and spread, and 8-hour leagues developed all over the country, alliances between existing unions and all kinds of new organizations, a group called the Knights of Labor, even though the president of it tried to stop these strikes, hundreds of thousands of people joined the Knights of Labor, thinking that that was the organization that was going to be the core of the 8-hour day movement. In some places, notably Chicago, anarchists played a major role and had hundreds of thousands of workers. They set a date, May Day, 1886. And hundreds of thousands of workers throughout the country walked off their jobs and closed down large parts of industry and then were met by, as you were saying before, very fierce repression. There was a frame-up of the anarchist leaders for killing policemen. Then Chicago was the center of the movement, and there was massive police repression. The striking thing about the way this got organized was it was originally an organization that passed a resolution for an eight-hour day, May 1st, institution of the eight-hour day, and then the organization just died, and it was really not organized by any central group. What happened is that workers in different cities around the country began hearing about this idea of a strike or something for 8-hour day, and they wanted that. And they began organizing themselves, and eventually some of the existing labor organizations and political organizations like the anarchist groups, after opposing it, began coming on board. But it really emerged out of local communities, local organizing, local ethnic communities, and just people who worked together who began talking about maybe we should become part of this. In that way, you can see, in spite of the enormous differences, some of the similarities to something like the emergence of Occupy Wall Street, which really was initiated by a call that was put out by a magazine up in Canada, didn't really have any depth of mass support or any kind of big organizing, but the idea appealed to people, caught people's imagination, and they said, yes, let's try this, let's do this. There had been a date set that people would come. It was almost like a fantasy. People will come with sleeping bags to Wall Street and will occupy it. And lo and behold, the idea caught fire and caught people's imaginations, and not hundreds of thousands, but a few thousand people actually showed up. And this story is told in Strike, along with a lot of the other, what I call, mini revolts of the 21st century. At first, it was ignored. Actually, a lot of the left scorned it and thought it was a pretty ridiculous idea. But it caught hold. Interestingly, in this case, the police repression was one of the things that made people say, wait a minute, we can't let these people be beaten up and arrested like this, and led to the development of wider support, especially supports in the labor movement. And within a few weeks, there were similar encampments all over the country, ultimately more than 600, and the movement connected globally, and actually there were simultaneous demonstrations in thousands of cities and occupations in cities around the world.
Hi, folks. This is Bill Resnick and KBOO, the Old Mole Variety Hour. Pear and Joe, tell us about we're going to discuss it. We're right now in the midst of our membership drive. Pear and Joe, tell us about KBOO and Strike and the kind of programming that KBOO brings.
Well, the first thing to say is we are in a matching period.
Strike,
we have labor unrest here.
Picket line
and marching up and down here in the room.
You know, people forget that this country was founded by working people, that working people built this nation, and they forget it because we're deliberately told lies, distortions, mm-hmm. and non-information. But, and here's what's really important, KBOO has stayed true constantly, arguing for the rights of working people, for equality for all peoples, for justice in America, for peace, and for all those things which really should matter more to the American people. We are where it's at, and you want to be part of that. And in order to be part of that, you've got to make a contribution to KBOO. But wait, there's more.
Double your money, double your fun.
How? Remember, we got a matching period, $300 match for this show for right now. Every dollar you give is $2, in fact. Won't you join us in this great enterprise?
How do they join?
Oh, it's easy. All you have to do is go hit your telephone. Imagine that, an old-fashioned instrument like a telephone. 877-500-5266. Let me repeat that number. 877-500-5266. By the way, 5266 is KBOO.
Really?
It is.
It spells it out.
And if you are online, well, still, KBOO.FM gets you right into our center, and money comes pouring out of your hearts and out of your souls and out of your pocketbook just by making a commitment on the right-hand side of the tip jar.
I thought it was the pickle jar.
Pickle jar, tip jar.
It's a kielbasa jar.
You never know, anyone who ever gets their hand caught in the jar and they can't, you know, okay, never mind.
The monkey trap.
20 Southeast 8th Avenue. You can walk in here, see our palatial palace of culture. All of this because we care and we know you care. So, double the impact, 877-500-5266. And we'll give away. We're going to give away as a reward for those who make a significant contribution, the book Strike, which I've read and is great, by Jeremy Brecker. Yes, this is a big thing, a big opportunity.
See, somebody's taking advantage of it right now.
Yeah, somebody's calling right now to get a copy of the book. And remember, it's double your money, double your fun here at KBOO.
Do it now, 877-500-5266, or KBOO.FM. Click on the kielbasa jar. Fill it up. Fill it to overflowing. Yeah, the thing is, and it's time to get back into Bill Resnick and the interview, but give us a call.
Thanks, Joe and Pear. We're returning to our Old Mole interview with Jeremy Brecker, who wrote that wonderful classic book, Strike. It's new edition, updated to include contemporary events. In the first part of the interview, Jeremy Brecker discussed the repeated massive challenges by working people to the corporate state that happened throughout U.S. history and what they had in common. Those challenges are still occurring, not as intense as we would like, but in fact, intensity is emerging. I began part two of the interview observing that while those great struggles were surely heroic, democratic, promising, they were ultimately put down in various ways, by severe violent repression, by concessions to workers. All sorts of things were won, and what we have now is a product of all of those struggles. This country has many virtues, actually, and many, many, of course, flaws. They were also put down by a renewal of capitalist growth and employment and profits that reintegrated people into the system. I then hypothesized to Jeremy that those mechanisms for restoring elite rule and their top-down management, they may not be as potent today and useful this time around. Here's Brecker's reply to that hypothesis. It was quite incredible. And also, like in the general strikes of the 19th century, people not only occupied space, they took over. They took over factories. They took over these public spaces. They made it their own. They developed communities that were democratically run and were, in fact, meeting the necessities of the people involved. And in the 19th century, in many of the general strikes, they had feeding programs, they had daycare, they had transit running for the workers. It seems to me they began running their cities. These ordinary people got themselves together to, in fact, they had the capacity to self-manage.
You can recognize it like a bird call through both the historical mass strikes and also looking at the mini revolts of the last few years, is the ability of people to organize their own activities as they need to. For example, in the great sit-down strikes of the 1930s, people would organize, take over a plant like a big General Motors auto plant in a city like Detroit or Flint. And they would organize an entire community life. They would have a kind of nonviolent police force. They would have a rumor committee that would chase down rumors. They would have an information committee that would spread constant information about what was going on both inside and outside the plant. They would have groups that would do sanitation, sweeping and cleaning every few hours. They would have entertainment where everyone had to do some kind of song or trick or other entertaining activity. And it was extremely interesting as we watched For example, the occupation of the Wisconsin State House during the so-called Wisconsin Uprising, or Occupy Wall Street, how many of the same kinds of self-organized activities, whether they were medical care, clinics, improvised sanitation, and Occupy Wall Street had a huge food service operation with gourmet chefs and food being carried in from special kitchens out in the outer boroughs and delivered hot, piping hot to Zuccotti Square. And that has continued to be a common characteristic. And whether these fights win or lose in an immediate sense of their demands and whether they're able to sustain something like an occupation, they show the way that people are able to organize themselves.
This is KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. I'm Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Jeremy Brecker, author of the classic book, now updated to include contemporary events. It discusses the repeated massive challenges to the corporate state apparatus throughout U.S. history, and how even 100 and more years apart, they had a great deal in common, that they were from ordinary people who did extraordinary things like forming communities and maintain life and provide necessities and were basically democratically self-managed. Yet they were all ultimately put down in one way or another by severe violent repression, sometimes by concessions to the workers, often. And also by, though, I think underlying it all, the success of capitalist exploitation through the last 150 years, it's by capitalist growth and growth in employment and profits that sort of were compensation for people and reintegrated so many people into the system. Now it seems to me, though, that all of those mechanisms through which the elites managed to maintain their rule and for restoring elite rule and their top-down management in the face of these challenges, they may not be available today. Maybe give us a sense of that.
Well, it's very difficult to predict, as Yogi Berra said, especially the future. But, you know, it's often said that any ruling group rules by two tactics, concession and repression. And we'll certainly see plenty of the repression side of that. We certainly are seeing it now. It's much more difficult to provide serious concessions to insurgent movements in a situation where there isn't easy economic growth and where there isn't really a control of the political system that's set up to make concessions, to give what's sometimes called hegemony, where you draw in those who oppose the ruling groups and make them feel like they've got a stake in the system. It could happen, but we're really looking at a time when working people have been frozen out of the ability to participate in the benefits of society. And that is now being made much more severe, both by the kinds of global recession that we've seen, which appears to be basically unending, and also by something that is often left out of the picture, which is the growing threat of climate change as a result of global warming. This is something that is going to erode living standards and well-being. In fact, it's already eroding the living standards and well-being of American workers as well as workers around the world. So I think we're going to see a convergence of the problems that have resulted in mass strikes over the past century and a half with a new set of problems, but that are also going to be devastating for working people and are going to mean that really moving out of passivity and into some kind of collective action is going to be a necessity just for people to be able to live and survive and have any kind of decent life.
Yeah, and those people now have probably even greater, seems to me, capacities for communicating, that's for certain, and also for the techniques of democratic management. We know so much more, and people are ready for it. I think there's a lot of hope. I'm sure you agree, Jeremy Brecker. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Great. Thanks so much for having me, and greetings to all people who are helping to address these problems.
That was Jeremy Brecker. Again, he just published a revised, updated version of his wonderful book, Strike, that chronicles the repeated and continuing uprisings of the U.S. working class. Jeremy's publisher made 5 copies of Strike available to us as a gift for folks who become members or renew or donate. I invite you to do any one of those 3. It gives a whole new perspective on American working people and their potentials, the book Strike. And, of course, getting that book is but one of the many benefits that come to people who become KBOO members. And one of those benefits is feeling part of and supporting the station that supports you. Joe and Pear, how can folks get involved?
Well, they can give us a call at 877-500-5266. And give us $1 and it'll turn into $2.
How does that happen?
$1 turns into $2, yes.
Oh, we have a matching period.
Yes, we have an anonymous KBOO member who made a generous offer. He's going to match every dollar that is contributed to the Old Mo Variety Hour will magically double.
Yeah, that's true for $300 worth of commitment. And we expect that you all out there realize the value of this show. The Old Mo is really hardcore. It's a tradition, a very important tradition of progressivism. There's an irony, a tradition of progressivism. And we are giving away, for a mere $75, Strike.
I thought it was $60.
$60. No, $60. Even better.
$60.
$60. Yeah. You can get a copy of this book. I've read it. It's actually a good book. It's a good analysis of working class history in America. And you want to do that. And you want to support the Old Mole. And you want to support KBOO. And now's your opportunity to turn every dollar you give into $2. Won't you call now? 877-500-5266. Let me repeat that number slowly. 877-500-5266. You pick up the phone, you make that call. Our incredibly pleasant, even brilliant staff of non-paid people will take your money and we'll turn it into power.
Hey, come on down to 20 Southeast 8th. Visit our corporate headquarters here.
Right.
See Joe in action. See him behind the microphone.
Use our golden toilet seats and experience our marble walls.
The executive hot tub.
Oh, the executive hot tub.
No, we're not supposed to tell him about that, are we?
Oh, we aren't supposed to tell him about that in the time we
cook. You never heard it,
the
folks.
The time we cook the kid. Never mind. 877-500-5266. This is for real. This is what matters. This is your opportunity to make a commitment, not just to KBOO, but to the struggle of, and I know it sounds corny, but it's still true, working class people in America.
And our staff are members of the Communication Workers of America.
Yes, they unionized. Unionization. 877-500-5266.
I don't know. I've been in about 7 different unions in my working career.
I've been in 4. 877-500-5266.
Or 20 Southeast 8th. Come on down and see us. Visit our, share a bagel with us. Have a cup of coffee.
We got bagels.
Yes, we dip into our bagel vault. The whole bag of bagels.
The bagel vault. They're solid, solid bagels. Your teeth on them. And, you know, if you're online, you just go KBOO.FM and boom, a vast empire opens up for you. And over in the right-hand corner, an opportunity to make a contribution. Any amount is welcome. We think about $40 is about average, but, you know, it's really up to you. You give us $60. Is that right? $60.
$60. It becomes $120.
It becomes $120, and you get a copy of Strike, which honestly is a very good labor history book.
Hey, we have people to ring the bell for. We want to thank Fran renewing from Portland. We want to thank Lynn, who is renewing from Portland. And we want to thank Kim, who is renewing from Tigard. Thank you, one and all. We welcome you to the KBOO family, and we know you'll love it here because we're all one part of one big weird family. But that's what keeps the world going. Weird
double
family.
Your impact and double your fun by giving some money to KBOO, son. Okay, that was a bad rhyme, but don't worry, we'll get worse. What we want you to do is make a contribution to KBOO right now during the Old Mole Variety Hour. Old Mole's good. Old Mole's powerful. Old Mole will save your soul. In order for that to happen, you need to make a contribution. 877 877-500-5266. And remember, every dollar you give is doubled right now for $300 worth.
That's right. And we have this book, Strike, by Jeremy Brecker. We also have some other books. We have Capitalism Hits the Fan by Richard Wolff.
Capitalism Hits the Fan?
Yes, by Richard Wolff. Now, he's been on KBOO quite a bit. He's really good. He's an economist who makes sense. He talks. He doesn't talk in gobbledygook with a lot of math and formulas and everything.
I don't know. I like math and formulas.
You do? Okay.
Oh,
well,
yeah. I'm all for them.
Okay. And anyway, Richard Wolff, he has this book out called Capitalism Hits the Fan, and we also have another book, Save Our Unions, Dispatches from a Movement in Distress. This is by Steve Early, who was, I think he was here in Portland recently.
Steve Early's
about
a good man.
Yeah.
I want to just say the numbers again, because I know some of you may be confused. This is an opportunity to make every dollar you give turn into $2. Call now, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Online, KBOO.FM. Come on down here, 20 Southeast 8th. You know, contributing to KBOO is contributing to the best in music. Contributing to KBOO is contributing to the best in good politics, good information, good literature, good world. Won't you do that right now? Don't stop. Don't hesitate. Don't think twice. It's all right. 877-500-5266.
Do it now. Do it now. You will not regret it.
Well, thanks, Joe and Pear, for your spirited promotion of KBOO. And thanks to you folks out there who are supporting this beacon of hope in Cascadia, this radio station. Stay tuned on the Old Mole for a review of the stage play After the Revolution. It's a really interesting play. Next on the Mole, Fran Michel has examined City Ballot Measure 2656. If it passes, it would establish an independent water, sewer, and environmental boards. Would that advance local democracy, as its backers insist? We think not. Here's Fran Michel.
The well-read Red has been reading the voter's pamphlet for Portland and has done some additional reading about Measure 26156, which, in the words of the voter's pamphlet, amends charter, creates water and sewer district with elected board. The arguments in favor of this measure speak to some real and reasonable concerns about how the city's water and sewer services have been administered of late. But the arguments in opposition and related supporting material suggest that this measure is likely to make those problems worse, not better, and that citizens should pursue alternate solutions, some of which are already in the works. As a post on Sustainable Business Oregon notes, quote, backed by a handful of large industrial water users in Portland and opposed by a large coalition of community, labor, and environmental organizations, the ballot measure has already received a thumbs down from the Oregonian, the Portland Tribune, the Willamette Week, and the Portland Mercury. Some of the backers of Measure 26156 showed their cards last year, revealing their interest in doing away with natural infrastructure to address stormwater management. In a lawsuit against the city, they argued that programs like green streets and watershed protection are unauthorized expenditures. They made a similar argument about programs for low-income ratepayers to help preserve their water service during tough times. Campaigners for the ballot measure focus on costs, and herein lie some ironies. First, it's worth noting that the measure itself does nothing to lower water and sewer rates. In fact, both the Independent City Club of Portland and the Portland Business Alliance studied Measure 26156 and concluded that, if approved, it would likely end up raising rates. Additionally, the natural infrastructure projects that ballot measure supporters are quick to dismiss actually save ratepayers money by helping avert the need to expand hard infrastructure and extend the viable lifespan of current systems. These projects also provide a rich array of co-benefits, including reduced flood risks and improved water quality and habitat. If there is a genuine cost issue to be had here, it's the additional cost of creating a new agency separate from city government that will no longer be able to share administrative services with other city bureaus. This may actually increase costs to ratepayers. In addition, the chief petitioner for the ballot measure would like to see property owners instead of water users pay the lion's share of the cost to clean up Portland Harbor's Superfund site, contaminated by industrial pollution. Paying Superfund costs based on property tax values rather than amount of water used would lower costs for Siltronic, the city's largest water user and the measure's major backer, but would raise rates for most of us. There's also likely to be a cost to litigating the measure. As the Audubon Society notes, a Multnomah County judge who reviewed the ballot title language ruled that the backers of the initiative failed to include East Portland, representing 25% of Portland's population, in the new voting districts that would elect the Water District Commissioners. The judge was unable to propose a remedy for this omission, meaning that East Portland could be permanently excluded from the new Water District. She also found that the new district would be removed from oversight by the city auditor, one of our most important accountability mechanisms. In addition to the judge's ruling, serious concerns have been raised about the potential costs of this initiative. Specifically, proponents of the initiative have not provided any information about the costs associated with creating a new governmental entity and have failed to assess potential impacts of the initiative on the two bureaus' currently outstanding bond ratings. As it stands, the initiative excludes a significant portion of Portland's population, removes critical accountability mechanisms, and could add significant unnecessary costs to the operation of these bureaus. It's ironic that one of the arguments proposed in support of the measure concerns the city's failure to get a waiver against covering the Mount Tabor Reservoir. Sunlight really is the best disinfectant, but this measure would block out the light. As the Audubon Society notes, residents of Portland may not always agree with the decisions made by the Portland City Council, but the public is able to track and weigh in on important decisions through regular public hearings, strong disclosure rules, an extensive budget process, and ultimately through elections. Recent budget hearings attended by hundreds of people stand as a case in point. Special district boards, by comparison, are typically much more obscure, remote, and faceless. Few people track the activities of special district boards. They receive virtually no media coverage. They meet relatively infrequently, and they're typically not included in media endorsement pages or watchdog group scorecards. Creating a special district to run our public utilities is a recipe for takeover by corporate interests, as well as less transparency and public oversight than exists today. Measure 26156 advocates say having an independent supervising board will bring light and democracy to the Water and Environmental Services Bureau. That might be true in a different and better world in which the separate board got their positions in real contested elections, in a country where the people had the time, money, and experience to meaningfully participate, in which the mainstream media was vigorous and independent. But we don't live in that world. In setting up that independent board in this world, in which money often buys elections, most media outlets represent elites, and the board's operations would be hidden in the cacophony, would just diminish popular voice in setting water and environmental policy. The real result of establishing the so-called independent board would be giving control to the big polluters and users to gut environmental policy and lower water rates to the biggest users. That leaves open the question of how to actually advance small-d democracy in this society. Obviously, a big question, but we can identify some of the prerequisites for moving towards authentic democracy. Fair elections and eligibility requirements. More security and higher wages and less time in work so people have time for civic engagement. Democratic processes and experiences in daily life, in families, in civil society, in schools, and especially at work. And more alternative, actually independent media. That is, needs more KABU. For the Old Mole Variety Hour, this has been Fran Michelle.
Thank you, Fran Michelle, on Measure 26156. And the question that Fran raised, what do we mean when we discuss democracy? And can a country in which political decision-making is confined to periodic elections and the great majority of people are estranged and, in fact, denied the real participation, can that country call itself democratic? Joe and Pear, one of the wonderful things about KABU is that that question is at the core of its programming. How do we democratize and certainly limit the power of concentrated money and ultimately lead to an egalitarian and democratic society? Tell us about KABU and how people can get involved in that struggle.
Well, first of all, I want to tell people that this is a fun station. We have the best music programming in the region, and that is not an exaggeration. We have the only straight-out left-wing perspective on many, many issues. This show is just one example of that. And one of the most amazing things of all is we have very generous contributors, one of whom an anonymous donor, has promised us $300 matching money. Every dollar you contribute to KBOO today turns into $2 by the magic of generosity.
That concentrates the money. You talk about concentrated money. That's one way KBOO concentrates the money. We take your $1 and turns it into two.
Yes.
So give us a call, 877-500-5266. Do
now,
it now.
I want to repeat that number because maybe
okay,
we said it. 877-500-5266, and of course online kboo.fm, and you can come in and visit 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. You'll be amazed, perhaps even appalled, at the magnificence of this operation.
You'll see our little green room here, you know, where we are.
The little green room.
Yes. What are those things hanging from the walls? Oh, they're pictures. Okay.
Oh, those are people. No. $60 gives you a copy of Strike, which is a great book. And we know that you know, because you're listening, how important the struggles that are taken on by the Old Mole and many, many others here at KBOO. We are proud of being the absolute ultimate in good progressive radio. And we want you to share in that pride by making a contribution. We don't exist with corporate help. We don't exist with the vast government conspiracies. We don't exist with any of that. We exist with your support. 877-500-5266 or 20 Southeast 8th or online kboo.fm.
People's radio, folks. People's radio needs people.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's why we come to you. We are people talking
to
people.
Yeah, look, every dollar you give right now becomes $2. It's an incredible bargain.
It sure is. For the $60 for the book Strike becomes $120. And
it's a magical moment. It's a moment of power. It's a moment of fun. It's a moment when you know the work that needs to be done can be done. 877-500-5266.
Do it now.
Yes.
Hi, folks. Yes, do it now. We're counting on you. Next on the show, The Old Mole, our show, The Old Mole. Yesterday, Norm Diamond and I went to a matinee performance of a stage play. It's called After the Revolution. It's about a family, three generations of a very close family, a political family, passionist leftist, but who came into great tension and struggle when its members lived through the ups and downs of the international and national and this country's left. And in fact, they developed different commitments. Norm, why don't you just start describing the family and their conflicts and the play?
Yeah, the story of the play, I think we can say very, very quickly, but I do want to issue then a spoiler alert. The play is called After the Revolution, as you said, Bill. There is no revolution that takes place in the play, nor has it taken place in society. The play is set pretty much in our times, 1999. The grandfather, his presence continues to dominate the family. He was a member of the Communist Party. It's his principles and his dedication that carried through the family. His son is a high school teacher, Ben, who takes great pride repeatedly in saying, "I'm a Marxist," and that seems to be what he tells in his classroom as well. The daughter, the granddaughter of the now deceased grandfather, who was the member of the Communist Party, the granddaughter has taken over a foundation probably she founded, if I understood correctly, in the grandfather's name. And it's a foundation that is designed to help people imprisoned for, for unjustly imprisoned.
Especially Mumia.
And yes, they emphasize Mumia a lot mm-hmm. in the play. Basically, the play revolves around the revelation, new to her, not to anybody else, not to any of the other characters, that the grandfather, this highly principled person, during World War II, gave secrets to the Soviet Union. This comes as a shock to her. It overthrows her thinking about who her grandfather was and what she's doing with her life as well.
And she resents the fact that her father betrayed her by not telling her that, in fact, the grandfather had passed secrets during World War II.
Which suggests a lot of ways we could talk about the play. We could talk about it as a family drama, because certainly it's that, with all, of course, the resonance of raising kids in a political family. There are real issues there, and there's a large literature as well of written by kids who've grown up in political families.
That was clearly the strength of the play. I thought it was very strong in that regard, that the people were, except for the daughter, it seems to me, they were really believable people with strong commitments and some disagreements who became, and what's really, I thought, really good, the political commitments were in many ways the basis of their love for one another and for their sort of the family bonds. And I thought that's an unusual play where it actually showed people who were living together and really liking each other, but not based on some kind of religious commitment or kinship or blood ties. It was primarily based on their common set of values and their sense of mission in life. And I thought that was, I mean, to be able to portray that was quite interesting.
We could talk about it from that angle. We could talk about it from the angle of how we use, how we create our own histories, how memory functions. But with limited amount of time, I'm going to throw a question back to you then. I was a little bit less enthusiastic about the play, although both of us are going to recommend that you, our audience, go and see it.
Oh, it's a very worthy play, yes.
There are good discussions to come out of it. But, Bill, your understanding, how did the play project what it means to be left?
Well, that was the problem, and that was the flaw at the in the center of the play. There's that flaw. It was a tremendous opportunity missed to, in fact, discuss that. Why don't you begin the discussion of that limitation of the play?
Well, I think there are two different dimensions to it. One is it just I ended up seeing it as geared toward people who already had left sympathies. Frankly, if you were to go in without that background, then what's meant by being left in the play? There's nothing about capitalism. There's nothing about corporations, even at that limited kind of critique of our society. Left, by and large, refers to an unjust government, a government that violates its own constitution. That's pretty much what we're given as left practice, is upholding the U.S. Constitution against depredations by the government. It's limited. Or it just assumes that you bring your own kind of understanding of left. That's one part, I think, of the answer. There's another as well.
I think it goes a little bit beyond that, in that it's sort of the government protecting dominant corporate interests. I think that was the sense of, but I agree. It's constitutionalism. It's fair play. It's justice in the court system. It's not having a HUAC investigating the grandfather. Those are the sort of the vision of the left, is this very liberal constitutionalist legal.
Yeah.
In fact, when you come down to it, that's the, you know, that's their version of the left.
Well, it's a severe limitation, I think, if you're going to talk about what left practice really is, or if you're going to project to an unknown audience. But beyond that, there's an historical kind of oversight as well, and that's that the play really does premise on what the grandmother says, and that is everyone with a heart and a brain in that time period was a member of the Communist Party. And that's just blatantly false. There was a very significant left that was not part of the Communist Party.
And in fact, critical of the Communist Party, and in fact that the great failing of the Communist Party was in rejecting their critique and, in fact, murdering many of their, of the anarchists, Trotskyists, many others, the Socialist Party at that time, in some countries, murdering their leadership and trying to destroy the party, and indeed turning them in sometimes to the authorities. The Communist Party was very heroic in many ways.
Yeah, admirable people, undoubtedly. A lot of bad policies, but the point is also that there really were alternatives. There were alternatives that saw what was going on in the Soviet Union and were critical of it. There were alternative groupings that did not just give up the right to strike, for instance, during World War II, as the Communist Party did in support of the war effort. This play projects, again, it's a limited vision of left practice, and it's a very limited understanding of the history of the times and what was possible.
It seems to me it also could have been, I mean, there's such a great opportunity lost. That's what I felt during the play. Even though I identify with the characters, was really involved in compelling their battles. And it was a feel-good story at the end, it wasn't a postmodern feel-good story. That is, it shows the desperation of the people, and at the end something happens to bring them all together and they're saved. I mean, that's sort of, in some ways, it's a joke. Most of the feel-good stories we see now, actually, in the depth of it, you know these people are doomed. This was a real feel-good story, it seems to me, that the people weren't doomed, that it was possible to reconcile their disagreements in a way that was decent. Unfortunately, their disagreements weren't interesting. That was the dilemma. And there were families that had those disagreements. Probably a majority of CP families by then had kids who were involved in the movement, but in a very different movement, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, one that was critical of the way the CP operated and in fact, held out a vision of a democratized society. And not, in fact, having the disputes amongst people, the legacy of the CP and the way that one would reach a democratized society, those are important questions that, in fact, people were debating at that time. And it's not in the play. That's the trend. I mean, that's the deep flaw of the play, even though it's really worth going to and talking about.
Yeah, it's very clear. The play concludes with a strong message that, of course, the struggle continues. But it's a limited notion of what that struggle is. I think that's how we'll have to sum it up. The play encourages continued participation, continued activism. Mumia is still in prison. We still have to fight. But it's, again, because he didn't get a fair trial, and that's what the entire struggle is about, uphold the Constitution. This is Norm Diamond. I've been talking with Bill Resnick about the play at Portland Playhouse, After the Revolution. We recommend you see it. Good discussions possible afterwards.
Yes, we're going to go back to Pear and Joe. Let me say one final little thing here, though, that both the Oregonian and New York Times really liked the play, actually. They gave it a great review. And it is a great drama of family relations and tensions produced by deep divisions in politics. The problem is that it didn't really talk about the most important divisions in politics, and Cabu actually is an antidote to that failure of the left to see the democratic possibilities. We actually build at Cabu progressive community in Portland, not to mention keeping Portland weird and wonderful, surely in contrast to most places. So Joe and Pear, tell us, how are things going in Membership Central?
Oh, it's exciting, it's fun, it's wild, it's weird, and we could really use a whole bunch more telephone calls.
Yes, to match the funds.
Matching, you know, there's money here. There's $300 to be matched, and we got along the way, but we need a lot of more support.
Don't leave it lying on the table, folks.
No, don't. When people offer money, pick it up. You know, that's really important. When you see money, I don't know, many of you probably don't play poker, but... you know, anyway, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266, KBOO.FM and 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We want to hear you. We want to hear you calling us. We want to hear you making commitments. Any amount of money is welcome. $60 maybe is the appropriate amount. $40 is welcome. Almost any amount. And remember, every single dollar you plunk down right now is worth $2 to the station.
That's amazing. Stephen heard the call and he renewed. Thank you, Stephen. And we also want to thank some of the restaurants that have been feeding our volunteers. We want to thank the Santa Fe Taqueria, 831 Northwest 23rd Avenue. And we want to thank Huber's at 411 Southwest 3rd Avenue. Thank you, one and all. They are part of the KBOO family of business enterprises.
The KBOO family of fine firms.
There we go. Hey, that's a good one. Yes.
You know. Sorry.
That was so funny, I'm speechless.
877-500-5266. You know, it's important to have hardcore and serious conversations about what is to be done, as Lenin once said. It's important to have arguments about what kind of a government can be working in America. It's important to talk about real democracy as opposed to phony democracy. And it's important to get to the root, that is, to the radical causes of problems. That's what KBOO does a lot, and that's what the old mole does.
Plus good music.
And not only mentioning that, let's mention the fact that we have the best music programming in the region and possibly in the world. And all of that you get for virtually nothing, except we think your moral and intellectual duty is to make a contribution to KBOO. Won't you do it now? And remember, it's doubled, twice as much. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm.
And if you come on down here to 20 Southeast 8th, you can see us here behind the microphones.
It'll terrify you.
People at the telephone waiting to hear from you. You can see our record library, which is bulging at the seams because we have so much different kinds of music. We don't have room for all the CDs and things we have.
And no Lars Larson.
Wow. That's the thing in itself.
A Lars Larson free zone. Won't you come down? 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
And for a $60 pledge, you can get that book Strike by Jeremy Brecker. And that $60 automatically becomes $120 and adds to our coffers. So give us a call. 877-500-5266.
Yeah, that's 877-500.
There's somebody calling right now.
5266. Make a contribution today. Remember, every dollar you put down is worth $2 for the next, a while.
Until 10 o'clock.
Until it all dies in 4 minutes. Yes. Don't let that happen.
Now is the hour when
you should make a contribution. 877-500-5266.
Do it now. Stop us from raving madly.
Stop this madness. Quickly,
yes,
call.
Yes. 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm and click on the jar up there in the corner.
Yeah, what you decided was a pickle jar?
Well, it'd be a pickle jar or a kielbasa jar, you know. You remember these bars used to have jars of pickled
eggs?
Sure, it's
a jar.
You know, pickled eggs.
Yeah, I know, pickled eggs. I remember pickled eggs. 877-500-5266. Make the call. Make the commitment. It's kind of come to Jesus moment. You know what I mean?
Where's he? Where you?
No, never mind. 877-500-5266. Do it now. Double your money, double your friends, double the power of the station, and never let it end.
And just kind of assembles it like a puzzle, and then he uploads it to the
affiliate station. Don't forget, 877-500-5266. You make the call, you decide how much you can give, we double it. What's to not know?
What's not to like?
Gee, what's not to love?
Do it now. We
want you. 877-500-5266.
Well, I think that ends today's show. It's 9:58:09, comrades. I want to do some thank yous to Jeremy Brecker, to Fran Michelle, Norm Diamond. Thanks to all those who renewed and pledged today and donated. Thanks to Pledge Central friends, Joe and Pear, and thanks to Mole Joe Clement for his excellent engineering. You can hear this show or any part of it again or any of our previous shows or recommend us to your friends. Tell them to go to the web, to KBOO, go to the top right, the search box, type Old Mole or Old Mole Variety Hour. Today's show will be up very soon, maybe even this afternoon, maybe tomorrow. Join us again next week for more news, views, and interviews from the Mole's Underground Perspective. I'm Bill Resnick, your host today, signing off for the Old Mole. See you next Monday at 9, and right after the show comes Air Cascania. One final message. If you haven't done it yet, please call, become a member, renew, donate, support KBOO. It's never too late to reach out and help this wonderful radio station. Thanks a lot.
To celebrate our spring membership drive, KBOO is proud to partner with Hopworks Urban Brewery to introduce the British Invasion IPA. Hopworks, an eco-brew pub offering sustainable organic beers, will have the British Invasion IPA on tap during our spring membership drive at both hub locations, 2944 Southeast Powell and 3947 North Williams in Portland. You can learn more about what the Hopworks British Invasion IPA means for KBOO at kboo.fm/IPA.
Cascadia. Today is Monday, May 12th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web, and at 1-877-500-5266. The reason I'm giving you that number right now up front is because today, right now up front, you can double the impact of your donation without any extra money out of pocket. An anonymous KBOO member has made an extremely generous offer to match the next $100 in donations called in during Air Cascadia. So you